Hello and welcome back to Hero with a Thousand Potions, a gaming podcast where two game likers in their 30s discuss the storytelling and gameplay of popular niche RPGs in a book club-like format. My name's Tyler.
I'm Nathan Tyler.
It is the end of Season 2 of covering Final Fantasy VII Remake and its parallel content in the original game from 1997. Today, we're going into the Singularity. We're going to see what the hell's up with that. And ideally, we bring it all the way to the finish line. How do you feel about that tonight, Nate?
I want it. I want it real bad. I want that finish line. Not because I'm not enjoying myself, but because there's just so much more to do, right?
Yeah, the other day you said you finished Rebirth. I'm about 55, 60 hours into it right now.
Right.
And so you've learned something, no doubt.
Yes, and I'm not going to talk about any of that. And also, we took pretty robust notes on our remake experience. I am going to deliver you, I promise, with all sincerity, my take on Remake as it was pre-playing any of Rebirth. I finished, you can check the timestamp on my stream on YouTube. I finished my note-taking playthrough commentary session prior to Rebirth's arrival at my doorstep. I have a physical copy that showed up 2 days later than launch. So that's it. And that's the take I'm going to be giving you here. So I am not going to give you any spoilers for Rebirth, and I'm not going to pretend to be some sort of savant of knowing what the hell's going on either.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're going to get the same take here that is on that stream from 2 months ago at this point or something like that.
Wonderful. And the same goes for me as well, although I am partway through. We're just in this funny space where we're dedicating ourselves to Remake. Rebirth is out and we're living in the paradigm. We're living in the zeitgeist moment of Rebirth right now.
Yeah.
But we're constraining the conversation to what the original mission was, Remake.
Right.
Nate, how you been, man?
I've been good. I'll also say this. I've been playing Ever Crisis on the side to kind of fulfill this craving for Final Fantasy. Now, I hate gacha games. I don't think the game satisfies the niche of like being a Final Fantasy remake, but I sent you a little picture here of just some of the like turn-based gameplay. And it just makes me think like, man, why couldn't we just get like a straightforward remake as well? Like, you know, the open world, the craziness that is Remake and Rebirth, it's all there. And obviously we're having a great time, but there's something about just the original game, like just a little fresh coat of paint or something. Like I'll say it this way. I'm not up for another 120 hour adventure just yet, but I've slammed so many replays of Final Fantasy VII OG over the years. It's like this infinitely replayable game that like with that fresh coat of paint of what you're seeing in this pic. Obviously we're on audio here, so I can't help you there, but go play Ever Crisis, check it out. And it's like these little, the like HD battles and little HD sprites they did for the like Lego characters and everything. It's just so charming and so gorgeous that I'm like, I kind of want that too. I kind of want them to use these assets to go back and like do a one-to-one real remake too. So that's where I'm at. I'm still in my free time. My life is pretty much normal, just the same going through the motions of regular everyday life. But on the side, I'm still craving more Final Fantasy VII.
Wonderful. Wonderful. In my case, well, in nerddom, I finished Star Ocean 2, the remake one, Reyna Quest, and that was fun. And there was some rumblings. It was in contention for what we might do for Season 3, but in hindsight, I'm glad we're not doing it because as great as it is, the dialogue is not that great, and the story doesn't have very many beats to it, contrary to what I remember. I mean, it was a good experience, and the item crafting was pretty great as well. It's probably the first game I ever played that had a lot of, like, a huge, huge, very in-depth item creation system. But it doesn't embody the character of the podcast in the way I think you and I and listeners kind of expect. But anyways, so that was a fun experience. Now I'm going through Octopath Traveler 2 when I'm not playing Rebirth. And my life is just completely ridiculous right now. I'm moving into a new house in 9 days. The buyer of my current house backed out for complex reasons that I don't think is very interesting in a video game podcast. But I'm just going to say Rocket Mortgage sucks. Put me on the record for that. It's not our lender, it's the other people's lender. But moving along from that, I'm gonna take it up this whole house and move it across the city because I'm still gonna be in Eau Claire. And
right.
into a bigger house. And oh my God. And by the way, like where I work, that office is having like a comprehensive remake as well. And I moved out of my desk there and everyone's working from home for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And I'm like, I'm moving from my home in like a week and change. And I can't guarantee I'm going to have internet when I move into the house. Plus since we're looking for a new buyer, we have like showings during the day where I'm not supposed to be around for showings. So, I mean, like at 11:30 tomorrow, there's a showing. What am I going to do with myself? I work at that time. It's like, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, you need to acquaint yourself with the McDonald's Starbucks office where you order a coffee once every 2 hours and you sit on your laptop. We've all seen that guy there.
Might have to do it. Okay, let's drag this season to the finish line, Nate.
Yeah.
All right.
We just stepped into the singularity.
We did. The portal Sephiroth opened after compelling all of the whispers that were surrounding the Shinra building to like race towards him, into him, into the portal he created behind him. And then Aerith kind of stabilized it with her magic and said some very profound things. And in we go.
If you're like a sci-fi series, book, TV, whatever, it's kind of like a tree falls in the wood. No one hears it. Did it make a sound? If you're a sci-fi series and you don't use the word or term or science of singularity at some point, are you really a sci-fi genre at all?
I think it's a limitation of language. Although I get the meminess of your comment. It's like, because like we know, you addressed what a singularity means at the end of the last episode, but it's, it is on the bingo board, so to speak.
The convergence.
But it's suffice to say, like it's the anomalous thing.
Yes.
The thing that'll blow your mind.
Yep.
On the other side, it's like a mirror image of our world at first, but then the sky goes dark and crackles with purple lightning. A storm of whispers descends from the sky, creating black and purple tornadoes that destroy the expressway. We run the other way back to the portal, but another tornado is closing in on us from that side as well. We are ragdolled hundreds of feet into the air. Cloud is separated from the group and pauses, realizing he's actually floating peacefully thousands and thousands of feet above the city. He sees a current of whispers in the air racing into a vortex nearby, which manifests a colossal godlike creature. We can only see its arms, torso, and head. It looks like it's made out of a carapace of glistening black metal, with a few glowing purple spots speckled over its face and chest. It creates a gravity well in its palm, which pulls huge chunks of concrete and other pieces of broken city into its godlike hand, at which point it hurls the debris at Cloud. Cloud leaps and slices through all of it, landing on a floating piece of highway. We take control of Cloud now, and he leaps across more sections of floating highway and other debris until finding Tifa and Barret surrounded by whispers. Cloud scatters them with his Buster Sword, and they all acknowledge the large godlike creature. The thing flicks its fingers at us, which propels three smaller creatures that look like little offsprings of the godlike creature into our area. Whisper Rubrum, Whisper Croqueo, and Whisper Viridi. Rubrum glows red and has a sword grafted onto one of his arms. Croqueo glows orange and has a laser cannon mounted onto each of its arms. And Viridi glows icy blue, and one of its arms has an overgrown fist.
Right.
Yeah, Nate, that was a lot of nonsense. What the hell? Yes. Right.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind when you see Cloud kind of like jumping from all these concrete sections, slicing through them, cutting through debris and everything, I immediately thought Advent Children. I don't know if that was the same for you.
Oh, dude. According to the remake Ultimania, these fighting styles are all taken from the three Sephiroth remnants from Advent Children.
Really? So that's not just an urban legend. That's officially in the Ultimania.
It's in the literature, dude. A Rubrum fights like, well, they all have like the equivalent Kadash, weapons.
Yaz, like, Lazu. Yeah.
Croqueo fights like Yazu. And in the Japanese version, its special skill, Amber Whirl, is actually Velvet Nightmare, which was the name of Yazu's gun. And then Viridi fights like Laz.
So Sephiroth is present in this whole scene, kind of screwing with things with the giant monolith in the background. The whispers are kind of swirling around him. So I go back to our, like, one of our first episodes. I don't remember which episode it was, but I name dropped that song from Advent Children after Sephiroth's appearance. So this is going to tap into me saying, like I did back then, that like potentially there's a Sephiroth who has like knowledge of Advent Children, right? And we have our precogging Aerith kind of tapping into knowledge. And I brought up that fact of when Cloud first saw Sephiroth in the alleyway there, he says, "But I killed you," like amidst the like intrusive flashes he had. And I had the question, like, when did you kill him, Cloud? Because at this stage, if we're talking Cloud seeing Sephiroth at this stage in an alleyway in OG, Cloud has no memories of him ever killing Sephiroth. Like, his duel faded to white, right? And he didn't know any of those details. So what you just said about the Ultimania is kind of officially confirming my thoughts that fragments of the future are bleeding into the present. And we'll even kind of officially get that in flashes we see in corresponding scenes coming up. So yeah, this whole thing, from him jumping on concrete, slicing through it, very Advent Children coded for me, almost pulling, squishing together, like the squishing, where as there's other themes that were brought into this early segment of the Final Fantasy OG canon events, we're now seeing pieces of things much later coming in. And yeah, it's, I remember thinking that was super interesting, even my first playthrough, without that confirmation you just gave me, like hearing the like urban legend of people on analysis videos after the fact being like, well, those are the same weapons as the Sephiroth remnants. And I'm like, but sword, fist, and gun are also Cloud, Tifa, and Barret, right?
That's, you know, the analog I thought it was in my first playthrough. Yeah,
right. So I was like, you know, that might just be a little bit of a stretch, but I mean, you got the book, so that's that. Case it's closed. There, yeah. Also, just to comment, like, I don't know if you ever had these moments, but there was like this time period of like PS3 with the tech demo or just like other games coming out on PS3 at the time, and the comparison that me and my friends had, we always would say, what if like Advent Children was just a game you could play? Like all the moves they're doing of like zipping around and dodging and like doing 1,000 attacks in a second. What if that was just the game? You know? And it's like, here it is for the most part.
Yeah, you're right. They're delivering on that. But you never thought it would be in some alternate dimension with these crazy psychedelic floating monsters and a godlike thing from torso up coming out of the ether.
Well, again, I said it in previous episodes, you can't have Motorball be the climax of an entire fucking video game. Like I also said, you had Final Fantasy VIII's giant light bulb lady, the big death titan at the end of 9. You had all of the crazy summon ject nut job. I don't know. This, I guess, this is spoilers. I'm spoiling several classic Final Fantasies for you right now. But, you know, hey, 25 plus year old game. Same logic as me spoiling the shit out of a 7OG. But I mean, this is right up that alley. The giant monolith steel city monster that is being forged here at the center of the singularity is that Final Fantasy climax boss that there was just no way they weren't going to deliver this in some capacity.
Yeah, that's true. We haven't addressed this dude's name yet. It is the Whisper Harbinger.
Right.
The big baddie here. So we get into combat with the three little guys. Well, not little. They do kind of stand over us, but they're certainly smaller than the Harbinger.
In their shape and their design, they give me a little bit of like a Sauron floating lich form. You know, they got the gun and the weapons of the Sephiroth splinters, I'll call them. But as far as their physical embodiment, like they don't look anything like them.
Yeah.
They're not anime fuckboys in any stretch.
Yeah, they're void warriors and mages and
yes,
gunsmiths. So staggering these guys transfers all damage done to them to the Whisper Harbinger. So their health pools are connected to a certain extent. And then periodically throughout the fight, the Whisper Harbinger will cast Correction. That's the name of a spell, Correction, which makes the three mini Harbingers vanish. And then the Harbinger blasts the heroes we have here with wind. And then he also can cast Intercession, in which the Whisper Harbinger swings its claw at us, destroying the battlefield we're on and compelling us to flee to a different area where the battle will continue.
It's funny that his move name is Correction, because Red 13 has kind of outlined that, like, the Whisper's existence is to correct the path of fate or destiny or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it's like you kicking the shit out of these things. The giant Whisper Harbinger is like, no, you do not get to win. Mm. I win. I am correcting this. And like, he's redoubling his efforts to kick the shit out of you. And it's just a funny move name in that light.
After you mention it, well, intercession could be like interference, like the an opposite of a correction. Well, I guess correction is an interference too, towards the path, which I'll just leave an abstract, but intercession might be like breaking from a path.
Right.
Two phases of that happens, fighting the three of them. And then in the next phase, we 1v3 Rubrum until it dies. And then killing Rubrum sloughs off one of the Harbinger's arms. This big towering creature's arm kind of disintegrates. It's weird. And then he roars, right? Mm-hmm. Aerith catches up to us as magical beams of life stream energy come screaming at the team. I mean, meaning that, like, you know, dealing serious damage to the Harbinger is releasing these magical beams of life stream energy. And we know that they're life stream energy because they're bright and they're glowy green, unlike all the other dark purple, gray, smoky concrete everythingness that's around us. It's a shot in the arm visually as it comes screaming towards us and hits everyone right on their fucking foreheads. We see it hit Cloud, Barrett, and Red 13, but someone makes a comment later that makes me think that they all say this saw the same thing. What we see is a quick flash forward of what looks like a little version of Red 13 racing along a wasteland. And this, if you've played OG, this looks an awful lot like the final shot of the final scene of the ending of FF7 OG.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it here quick.
Because in OG, the very last shot is of, well, I suppose it's the offspring of Red 13 or maybe someone else from the tribe. But I think we're meant to think that it's Red 13 because he hasn't expanded in a longer lifespan than humans. Goes up the wasteland and climbs up these rocky precipices and then looks down. And the camera, I think, pulls back and we see nature reclaiming a ruined Midgar. And that's how OG ends. But we're seeing it here.
Yeah, and OG had this like undercurrent tone of if they go ahead and defeat Sephiroth and the planet's able to do what it needs to do, it might just kill all humans because humans are the source of the planet's problem. Like that was something that was in the narrative of OG's like final chapters of we don't actually know what the heck's going to happen to all of us in the wake of like the planet purifying itself. And so obviously we got answers to that later with movies and compilation material and everything. But it's interesting that like, yeah, the future and the planet, it just has no tolerance for Midgar existing as is. Like Midgar is a relic of a bygone era mm-hmm. in that scene. And, you know, I like to think there's you said it's Red running with like two of his children, probably a limitation at the time, but wouldn't it be so cool if that scene was Red running with like hundreds or thousands of little orange furred wolf people up to look at it? Yeah. Just like, this is the future, you know?
Well, that would be a lot.
I'm not saying he fathered all of them. I'm saying like he is the clan master. I mean, he's had children, uh-huh. they've had children, uh-huh. and they've had, you know, and it's just gone on and on and on. But we always had the question of if Red is the last of his kind, who's the mom? Who mothered the two cubs?
They see that and Barrett says, "What the hell did I just see?" And then Red says, "A glimpse of tomorrow if we fail today." And I suppose, you know, Midgar undergoing a natural catastrophe, as in being reclaimed, sounds like a pretty good, like if you know, then you know that's a good outcome. But mm-hmm. I wonder if you're like, oh my God, Midgar was destroyed. If that would be like, if they would have the opposite read on it, like oh, Midgar was destroyed. And if we fail, that's like blood is on our hands. Not like, wow, we saved the planet.
Yeah.
It's funny how context can be.
I find it a really weird line because like, maybe Red isn't in tune with like himself from his future vision to know the greater context, but like he's saying in a way, if we fail, this is the future that comes to pass. And it's like Barrett is a guy who's systematically been bombing the shit out of all of Midgar's infrastructure. And then they see a vision of Midgar's infrastructure completely crippled and being retaken by the planet. That would be a 100% win in Barrett's perspective. Mm-hmm. And if Red's connected to himself also, yes, because I don't think that ending was intended as something negative whatsoever. That was
agreed.
Like 7 OG's version of catharsis. Yes, the like beloved girl died and there were so many sacrifices along the way, but in the end, it all works out. Big picture.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that they don't have is they don't have that handy little subtitle that says 500 years later. So like Red might see that flash and be like, oh, this is what's going to happen tonight if we don't stop this thing. Like,
I don't know.
And everyone's going to die. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a problem there. But to me, it's still weird that they're against that. I don't know.
No, I get that. In the next phase, the Harbinger destroys the battlefield we're on with his claw, the other claw, the one he still has, and the destroyed arm reforms. Now we 2v3 Crokeo and Viridi. Killing one sloughs off another arm, and then killing the other explodes the Harbinger's metal crown. As it is dying, more lifestream beams come heading for our heroes' brains. The one that hits Tifa's head shows her meteor descending upon the planet, and Tifa cries out, "This cannot be our future. The future is always a blank page." And there's less to read into this vision, I think, than the first one, because we've seen meteor before. I've described it as a big burning planet coming, like the sun exploding over Midgard. Like, I say that knowing that it's meteor, but like they don't know what meteor is in that moment.
Right. Well, and the question is, like, who hacked the vision from the Shinra display thing that they were in earlier, because they saw the same thing there. So whether that was like a Sephiroth intrusion or just Shinra somehow fucking knows, I can't imagine they do.
No.
So it's got to be some sort of magic happening in that moment. But yeah, when they see like a come to pass moment via the live stream and they see meteor, they do have some context of like, we've seen this before. So like, I'm not just nuts. This is a recurring thing.
The three mini Harbinger boys appear, and then Barrett shows up, and he dedicates himself to shooting at the Harbinger from afar while Cloud, Tifa, and Aerith go 3v3 against these guys all over again. Wait, wrong. They combine into Whisper Bahamut, because we haven't had a Bahamut fight. Another obligatory benchmark in a Final Fantasy game we haven't had yet is fighting a dragon called Bahamut, and we almost slipped by Remake without making it happen. Here he is.
Yes. Well, and Cloud says at the start of that fight, he drops the line that just does not seem characteristic of him, but he does it anyway. He says, "Bring it on, bitch."
He does not.
He does.
Okay.
He says, "Bring it on, bitch." Bring it on,
bitch. I do not recall that. That's hilarious.
Yep. Right here. Yeah, I'll send you the screen cap.
Sure. So Whisper Bahamut is a black and purple dragon with different parts that glow. The Technicolor boys is colors. It can slash at you. It shoots beams in front of itself. Umbral Strikes shoots a volley of homing energy balls. It can bind a target. It can breathe fire that can also silence and slow. And its ultimate ability, no surprises, is called Mega Flare. And it has a super long charge, but does a huge explosion that does intense damage to everything.
Cue the Leonardo DiCaprio slapping his finger at the TV meme.
Right.
You gotta have Bahamut. You gotta have Mega Flare. It's here. It's all here.
In my first playthrough, I died to Whisper Bahamut once or twice, I remember. But I got through it just fine. I've already had my last game over. I was on Motorball.
Right.
But how'd you do in that fight? Or all these fights?
I remember not having a terribly difficult time with these fights the first time through. I think it's because I might have, like, I remember my first time spending a non-trivial extra amount of time in the combat simulator when I could. And then this time, you know, I was just like, I could not be bothered to spend any extra time in there. So this game really doesn't have an incentive or a place to really grind anything. So right. I'm surprised that I did that. But I remember not having much trouble at all. And like, I think they cap you at level 50, if I'm being correct here. First time I was probably OP. This time I just had a better understanding of how to play the game too. So yeah, I did all right. Didn't have too many troubles.
We destroy each of them again, and then afterwards Baird uses Big Shot and Red 13 uses Stardust Ray onto the Harbinger itself.
Stardust Ray is cool as hell when you see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like a sound effect.
Yeah.
The Hollywood trailer sound.
Watch out, Marvel. Red 13's coming for you.
Yeah. So after they do a big shot, Sardis Ray, we don't necessarily see beams in this moment. It just shows a shot of Cloud like having a moment, you know, like eyes growing wide. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay.
And Cloud sees himself like doing a rising slash up at Sephiroth while Sephiroth is like bearing down on him. Now, it's kind of indicative that this might be the final fight from OG, but not really. It's confusing on what this moment is because Sephiroth is shirtless in the final fight of OG, whereas he is not in this flash. And it bears mentioning all of these little flashes they see are like pre-rendered cutscenes. They're not like using the in-game graphics. They're just using video footage. And that all of that video footage is from the introduction catching you up sequence from Advent Children. They're pulling directly out of that. Red running up on Midgar is a clip from the beginning of Advent Children.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
That's in the beginning of that movie. And then the meteor coming down is from the intro where Marlene is explaining everything that happened. So too is the clash between Cloud and Sephiroth. And after that flash happens, we see those life stream beams. They're more like a almost like a rainbow colored flickering every color. They're not necessarily green, but like you said, they are different than every dark, cloudy, purpley, goopy beam that is in this area. They stand apart for sure. After that flash with Cloud battling Sephiroth, we see the beams leaving the heads of Cloud, Aerith, and Tifa, and them like holding their heads like with a headache and kind of wincing from it. So that's that. That's the last flash I see until we get back into combat with Rubrum. And what's the other one that's left? The blue one?
Blue one is Viridi. I understand my notes now. I said first, second, and third, I thought was like a sequence of beams that aren't there. No, it's the first mini Harbinger dude you kill, the second mini Harbinger dude you kill, and the third. But I don't know if one is assigned to a specific Whisper villain, or if they will, if the first will always be the first and the second will always be the second. I have a feeling the first will always be the first, and so on.
It kind of has to be like that, I believe. I have the second flash here. You defeat another, you get into a fight with the two remaining specters, and then Barrett does another big shot, and Red 13 does a Sardis Ray again to attack the Whisper Harbinger.
Nice.
We get another flash. Do you want me to cover that?
If you please, if you want to.
The next flash you get is hands held in prayer. A stone hitting a materia hitting a stone floor and then splashing into a pool and then laying at the bottom of said pool.
No doubt.
And also I'll note while these memories are happening, we're getting that same like biting, staticky, sharp sound and static hitting the screen as when seemingly you're having Sephiroth intrusions on Cloud with like the black feather and his headaches. But this time these flashes are hitting everyone. They're hitting Tifa and Aerith, and those same visual effects are happening on the screen. So you could kind of read into that the Whisper Harbinger being broken down and these future events being shown to everybody. You could kind of read into like Sephiroth has that skill, that connection with Cloud as well. For whatever reason, I don't know, because like when we see that happening in Cloud, you think of it as a very negative, like he's under attack kind of thing. He's got this headache. But like in this instance, the Whisper Harbinger is not attacking us. He's like being broken down by us. And these things are just happening around them. So it seems like this is the unified visual language for perceiving events out of time. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, the last specter that's left is Viridi. Was that the same for you?
Probably.
Okay.
I can guarantee you Sword Dude was first because I'm getting pretty good at, and I'll talk more about this in the Sephiroth fight, but I'm getting pretty good at a particular counterattack ability.
Right.
That's allowing me to burn this dude down pretty fast.
All right. Barrett and Red deliver one final combo limit break. at this point, these like colorful bursts of energy are just pouring out of the Whisper Harbinger nonstop. It's not necessarily happening like an attack hits an area and they're pouring out of there. You can see it kind of happening in the background constantly because we've obliterated this thing.
It's beautiful.
The final flash that Cloud sees is him laying Aerith into a pool.
Or the Forgotten Capital.
It seems like this one is particularly painful to his head from the cutscene.
And to us all.
Yeah, he winces harder, holds his head a bit longer than the other ones.
And that's the end of him. The Whisper Harbinger explodes into crackling lightning, beams of light, and life stream particles. We're in some sort of limbo, surrounded by white textures and other particles, and we hear Sephiroth say, "I'm waiting, Cloud."
I'm waiting, Cloud.
The white fades to darkness, and then a cataclysmic meteor shows up out of nowhere and destroys everything in sight and suspends huge chunks of concrete into the air. Sephiroth is floating in the center of a purple nexus of energy. Evil torrents of energy come pouring out of the meteor and races into the nexus. When the last of the torrent reaches the nexus, all reality gets sucked in with it. A large hole opens up in the clouds above, and a heavenly pillar of light reaches down to the earth. Sephiroth swings his sword, and all the chaos dies, save for the floating chunks of concrete and a few black feathers. Sephiroth raises his hand and through telekinesis lifts the Shinra building out of the rubble and hurls it at us. Everybody scatters. Cloud's got a determined look on his face, and he cuts through falling trains and enormous Mako pipes to get to Sephiroth. But here he is, literally hovering over Cloud's shoulder. "Let's finish this," says Cloud. And it's time to fight Sephiroth.
Like I said, this section is new to the game, obviously. This is so heavily Advent Children coded. Even the like cloudy skies with the single ray pillar of light coming through the top, like beaming down on Sephiroth as he floats there, as chunks of like Shinra debris are being hurled at the hero. Mm-hmm. This is all, we've seen this before. We're reliving the moment again. So it has to be intentional. And you've kind of hinted at that it is via the Ultimania. So yeah.
It's a 1v1. Well, for phase one it is. And we feel like we have to have a Sephiroth fight. And finally we are. This is the last encounter in the game. And the music has come to a pitch. Is it One Winged Angel? I can't even remember.
Yes. There's a stark transition of when we go from the pre-rendered cutscene to the in-game engine and Sephiroth floating down on us. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely One Winged Angel. Just, I don't know, what is the instrument? The da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- right through the existing soundtrack to say, all right, you're doing this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One Winged Angel being Nobuo Uematsu's top three, possibly number one jam that he's known for.
You're right.
I've heard it described online once as Stravinsky meets Hendrix.
Right.
You know?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. There's the original one that we first heard with Final Fantasy VII OG that was just purely, you know, orchestral, classical, intense music, right? And then there is the Advent Children version that straight up has a, like, metal guitar breakdown in the middle of it that is so iconic that I think that might be the version that lives on in people's heads when they think of it from time to mm-hmm. time. Because I remember in both instances, the very first time I played, I got to this fight with Sephiroth was with a friend back in 97 or 98, whenever it was that we eventually got to this point and we were playing the game and that music came on. And when the vocals came in, my friend was like, just, oh my God. This game is so insane. And we were both like, you ever have those like shivers of something is so cool that you just can't contain like how your bodily reaction to it. You're just so excited. That was playing the original Sephiroth fight for me. That was that.
Yes.
And I think I lost and my friend didn't actually get to see the ending that night because he had to go home later.
Oh, bummer.
And then the first time I saw Advent Children was with a different friend of mine and he's like a metalhead. So when he when he heard the like guitar riff come on during the Sephiroth fight, he was just like, oh shit. Yeah. Like he was way into that. So in both instances, this song, like, I don't know, I don't want to say like converted a new fan, but just like stunned the in my perception of it, stunned the people listening to it because it was so good.
I bet the Advent Children version was recorded in, at least in part, by the Black Mages, which was Nobu Uematsu's prog slash power metal band. Yeah. that had a couple albums, maybe three or four, of Final Fantasy, well known and like deep cut Final Fantasy tracks. Mm-hmm. and that was quite active in the aughts decade, and Advent Children came out in the aughts, so I can't imagine that it was applied in that sort of way,
right?
But this is a different, you know, recording arrangement.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Sephiroth, there are four phases. It begins with Cloud going solo. Sephiroth has skills in phase one where he does normal slashes, spin slashes, a triple slash move, and he does a counterattack. He can cast Faraga and Blazaga, but won't cast Thundaga or Aeroga until phase two. When we get to phase two, we get an extra party member, Aerith. And then he'll cast Hell's Gate, which is a dramatic leap strike move that looks an awful lot like the killing blow onto Aerith. Can you imagine? Hey, close your eyes and like imagine OG, the cutscene with the assassinating Aerith. And partway through, as he comes down, he has to do like, he does a Hell's Gate, or, well, you wouldn't have audio in the cutscene because we didn't have that until 10. And so it would be like the cutscene would end and then you would go back into Lego people and he would fall down and he'd like slash a sword and then like it would print on the screen, Hell's Gate.
Yeah.
But he doesn't holler it here, I'm pretty sure. But it's just, I never thought to me that we would have to name that move, but we do now.
The holding your sword downward is well, that's the thing. Like, as a kid, you thought it was so cool that, like, every time, I'll use the example of Digimon, right? And every time Agumon is, like, bursting fire from his mouth, he has to go, Pepper Breath! Pepper Breath! But he's saying it as he cannot move his lips as he's spewing fire out from his mouth. So the question is like, who's saying this while they're doing it? But you never questioned it as a kid. It was just so cool. And then you went on the playground and you screamed Pepper Breath at all your friends too, to let them know how serious you were about kicking their ass.
Digimon style.
Yeah. And then it even like, you can bring it all the way to today where you're playing Street Fighter 6 and Hadouken,
oh, yeah.
Hadouken. And it's like, who would do that? Why do you, like, I have to give props to Akuma, the, like, secret, maybe not secret, but, like, the badass old evil Ryu clone. He doesn't yell the names of his attacks.
Hmm.
I never thought about that as a child. It was just cool to name all your moves and then scream them when doing them. But as an adult, I'm like, oh, right, that's pretty stupid, isn't it?
Well, it's a level up from Ki, because, you know, you gotta, when you do martial arts, you wanna, as you're executing a move, you wanna holler something with it too, not just because like releasing air in your diaphragm helps you with like the power, but it's also like a spiritual thing, right, as well. But we have elevated that into hollering the name of the move we're doing, not just a hi-yah. Personally, all my martial arts moves are hi-yah. That's what they're called. Right. Yeah. Trademarked.
And like, I'm sure they're actual words or something, but I remember way back in the day, Tekken was one of the earliest games to have like full vocals on characters while you're in the middle of the fight. They'd eventually add them later to other games. Like you'd hear Hadouken and such from classic games, but you could never really tell what the hell they're saying. But like Tekken was the one that just sounded like real human voices and not like synchronized, what's the word, like meaty voices in a way.
Yeah.
And so that was the one where I was just like, they were doing the Kiat Poria, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, oh, okay, this is like, you can feel the intensity of it, where it never really felt intense in the old games when they're just like giving move names, you know. Anyway, big tangent,
love it. Other skills that we see beginning in phase two is waves of energy go racing out of him, and boundless void, which is where he pulls a hero towards him and then he uppercuts the hero into the air. Phase three, we had a full party now. We have Tifa joining the fight and one black wing appears on Sephiroth's back. Now we can cast Shadow Flare, and it'll also cycle through four elemental buffs. Flame Wall, which spreads fire on the ground that explodes. Frost Spike, in which ice crystals explode if not destroyed first. Thunderstorm, where 6 lightning bolts come down all over us. And Wind Wail, in which Sephiroth's counterattacks deal extra wind damage, and if he casts a Roga, it leaves a damaging vortex on the battlefield. When we get him to about, is it 10% or so, we get into phase 4, where it's do or die. Whispers surround Sephiroth, and he summons Meteor again. Armageddon smolders in the background throughout the final phase here, and we'll see more abilities. Blade of Ruin, which is a powerful melee strike. Wave of Nihility, which is a shockwave of dark energy. Heartless Angel, which is a jump dive whose explosion reduces everyone's health to a single HP. Another hallmark thing that we tend to see in final boss battles, reducing everybody to single-digit health, and then suddenly he's got to relax for a turn. There's enough. It's alarming, but they usually set aside time for everyone to kind of res themselves or help themselves out. At least that's my experience. But you got to have something like that.
I hate the one health super move thing.
Why?
I mean, if it's like something where I like, if it's got a countdown or a big tell or somewhere where I can like build up my ATB to prepare for a quick reaction afterwards, it's almost like basically what I would call like a retry check of your first time through. You don't know it's coming. You're not prepared. You are just going to get game over because you just can't react in time. And then your second time through, you know it's coming. You still might not be able to react in time. And then the third one, you might catch it. That's all I'll say about that. For a certain reason, some of our listeners might know.
Mm-hmm.
I will mention one of his attacks is like a flurry of blows called Telluric Fury. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yes.
But also, Aerith has her skill books are called like the Telluric Notes or
scriptures
like
or something.
Scripture. Yes, scriptures, right? And I looked it up. That means like of the earth is the concept. So it's interesting that like Sephiroth and Aerith are both tapping into the same energy of like my connection to the earth is where I get my power, and his connection to the earth's fury is where he's getting his power. I mean, it might just be the name of a move and not a huge overarching connection.
No, but there is overarching connection because they're both of the earth in different ways. And no, I think you're drawing an appropriate line.
Obviously, like Sephiroth is Cloud's rival and their battle is in Kingdom Hearts and Smash Brothers, and they are the two sword guys sorting it up. But really, in terms of the stakes of like OG and in theory, what we're seeing here with the Whisper Harbinger and everything going on, Sephiroth's rival is Aerith, if we're being honest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing a little bit of that with the naming.
I love it. Thanks for that detail. Final and last and lastly cast ability in his giant skill book is Divine Proclamation. Countdown from 9. Guaranteed game over if he gets it off.
Right.
And yeah, very much like the Arsenal fight, there's a do or die, you know, like you've got like output damage now immediately or else, or do this all over again. And I really don't want to do that. In my first playthrough, I did die to him once, and it wasn't at Divine Proclamation. I think it was probably the prior phase 3.
Yeah, I can't remember if I died to him at all. It probably was during the 1 HP thing.
Right. Trauma. Brain response.
Yes.
So Cloud has an ability called Counter Stance, and it was so huge for me. Now it's like a leveled up version of the Punisher mode counterattack that you can do, but it's an ability. So you cast Counter Stance, and in the block of time that you're awaiting a melee blow to come in, you're not doing anything. Like that is the ability. You're inviting an opportunity for you to do your counter stance move. Now, when Sephiroth does come in for melee blows, it is reasonably telegraphed. And I did pack Cloud's build with auto attack stuff, very much like how I described it in the Rufus fight that we had a few episodes ago, where I was big on attack damage. I had like barrier materia. I had chalk, like very, very, very no mana. I mean, barrier aside, protect aside. And so So counter stance attacks were coming in quite consistently and strongly, and I was bringing him down pretty well. And quite honestly, this fight was not the challenge it was for me compared to other late game boss fights. Although this is much more thrilling and has a, you know, extra cinematic flavor crystals sprinkled in. My God, you've got a, you know, a Shinra building being thrown at you and meteor, you know, bearing down over on top of you over the course of the fight. So, but yeah, I did pretty well.
Did we talk about how he gets his one wing?
At the beginning of phase three. But I didn't say how. If your emphasis of the question is how.
It almost seems, because he naturally just, in my perception, this was not a thing in OG in any capacity, right? Mm-hmm. You never see Sephiroth with one wing, like the big black wing. That was Advent Children?
Well, he's got one white wing and a final fight.
The final fight, okay, yes.
Bizarro Sephiroth had wings too. Hold on, let's verify that.
Okay.
He had wing arms. He didn't have extra appendage wings. His arms were wings.
Right. There's the compilation materials imply that these dudes, the Sephiroth likes, they all can just pop a single wing at any time. Like, it's just normal, right? So in this, though, it almost looks like there's shadowy whisper energy that makes the wing for him. Like, he's not just popping it out of his back, as you would expect. And so I don't know if there's significance to that like the whispers are his connection to some sort of ascendancy happening here. Because again, we just know that he can kind of just do that on his own. So I don't know. I don't know what the meaning of that is, seeing that almost if he's like, we had Whisper Bahamut. Is he like Whisper Sephiroth in some capacity? I don't know.
Interesting. I don't know that answer.
I'm going to look at it again.
Sure.
Okay, I'm kicking his ass. He doesn't have it yet. Yeah, I'm 100% going to say that it's like a whisper thing. He like summons this cloudy, dark energy. There's feathers flying all over. You can kind of say, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's not necessarily whispers. Whispers have this like visual effect of like a swarming school of fish. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like,
I know what you're talking about.
Tiny little fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when he generates the wings, those are like bursting out from him in that. So just that's the feeling I got when I first saw it. And it's still the feeling I have now that like this is some sort of whisper Sephiroth in some capacity. Whatever that means, I mean, even with my clairvoyance of the future of playing a whole nother Final Fantasy game, I don't know what that sentence means of what a whisper Sephiroth would be. I'll just say that.
No, I get it. And I'm looking at the Sephiroth clutching his chest and, you know, getting wrecked post-fight. His wing disappears and it looks, things are happening really, really fast. And it looks like a bunch of whispers are exploding out of the wing as it disappears.
Yeah, right.
So we might be onto something there. Difficult to say. But yeah, meteor disappears into lightstream dust. Like I said, Sephiroth clutches his chest and then whispers jump out of him, maybe his wing, and rush the three of us. Barret and Red 13 all show up as well. And we all strike this awesome power pose that, again, would make for a great desktop background.
Mm-hmm.
An army of whispers are either protecting Sephiroth or storming the team. But Aerith, Tifa, and Barret are effortlessly blast, punch, and shoot whispers into nothingness. This cover fire is enough for Cloud to slice through a few more, leap onto a few floating platforms, and braver Sephiroth's ass. But Sephiroth is ready for the blow and parries Cloud's mighty strike. And then the two disappear. An explosion of light then fills the screen. We're racing through this like wormhole now, and we're in outer space. The two of us are, Cloud and Sephiroth, are standing in front of a glowing nebula. We're in shadow, standing on some asteroid or moon. And I had this idea, Nate, that so let's say we're looking at a nebula that is a star in formation, or is it a galaxy in formation? Is this a metaphor for a fictional universe in recreation, or being born or reborn again?
The imagery of Cloud like diving headfirst through a universal butthole or something, that's from OG as well. So it's like poetry, it rhymes, right? Redoing that moment, even though the context is completely different, that moment of traveling through the wormhole of the life stream to the center of the planet and seeing just it's him and Sephiroth alone, it's completely retold here.
Not shirtless this time.
Yes. Now, can I say something about the area here?
Of course.
In the background, we're in this like space area. You see galaxies, nebulas, stars, everything. You're given that feeling of one with the universe in this moment. But in the background behind Cloud, there is definitely 100% like a space Yggdrasil representation happening in some degree, that like the tree of the world where all the realms are connected together as one is through space imagery depicted behind Cloud, in my opinion. That's like where they are. This would be the like interconnected highway of galaxies or worlds or whatever you want to call it.
You mean that red column of space gas?
Doesn't it look like a big tree?
It does. It looks like, well, it's got like a root system coming up out of the ground and coming and slimming up into a trunk. Interesting read.
Well, and it's not, I would say like, oh wow, that's so profound, but like it's not that original of a read in light of the Marvel Thor movies, because that's basically their take on like the Norse gods, is that like science and magic and gods and everything, it's all the same, and Asgard is just like a place where regular mortals found energy that made them into gods, and that Yggdrasil, the world tree, is like the interconnected like pathways of space, of like there's these like light speed streams you can travel throughout the universe and everything that connects the life forces of all worlds. So this is all kind of explored in Thor. So the imagery to me is not that like profound or original in this case. But what I will draw on is that a lot of Final Fantasy VII's terminology is rooted in Norse mythology. So I could see them going in this direction as like an explanation of what we're seeing here is the quote unquote world tree area.
This place had a name. What was it called? I don't have a note on what it was named.
I don't either. Like, let's see.
Creations. The end of creation. The edge. Yeah, no, edge. It's edge something. Edge of creation.
I'm watching, but I don't have a subtitle telling me the location.
It is edge of creation.
Okay.
Cloud is just racked with pain, and Sephiroth is standing over him. Sephiroth says, "Careful now. That which lies ahead does not yet exist. Our world will become a part of it one day, but I will not end, nor will I have you end. Lend me your strength. Let us defy destiny together."
Careful now. That which lies ahead does not yet exist. Our world will become a part of it one day, but I will not end. Nor will I have you end.
This is
the edge of creation. Cloud, lend me your strength. Let us defy destiny together.
He holds out his hand, and Cloud draws his sword and says, "Never." Now, let's slow this down here. That which lies ahead does not yet exist, this unknown future. But our world will become part of it one day. So destiny is splitting, and he's going to reintegrate it again. Or forces are going to reintegrate it again. That is Sephiroth's prophecy. But I will not end, meaning I'm going to see this through. My master plan is going to come to fruition. That's my expectation. But nor will I have you end. That must mean that Cloud is critical to this plan. Of course, we know he's been pseudo controlling him, manipulating him, mind fucking him throughout the course of Remake and OG, for that matter. Lend me your strength. There's something Cloud has inside him that Sephiroth wants to leverage, but it's not very clear on what that is, with the exception of, throughout Remake, it's been Cloud, run away, you know, do this. I need you for something. And it's probably this splitting of the timeline here. And then the final thing he says, let us defy destiny together. Together, we are going to create this timeline for which I'm going to use to my ends.
Right. Well, if you go with my interpretation of earlier episodes and scenes and everything, here's my take on this scene, is that Sephiroth as a mortal being was killed in the culmination of Final Fantasy VII Original. He was in the Northern Crater, he was gathering energy, he became almost godlike, and then he got killed by Cloud. Now, the rub is Sephiroth is connected to Genova in some way, that anything that carries Genova's cells, he has found a means and a way to manifest in them. And Genova has spent so much time essentially corrupting the live stream or using it in some capacity. I don't know all the specifics of this, that we see that she too can live on in the live stream. We know that from the geostigma disease in Advent Children, that she's still corrupting people. Like, not like, oh, they got touched by a gooey, icky piece of Genova goo and they got sick from it. It's that people just living their everyday life absorb and take sustenance from the natural life stream just flowing through the world. And she's in there making people sick. Like, that is the after effect of killing Genova's corporeal body along with Sephiroth. So they're dead, but they live on in the live stream in like fragments. And then like even the Sephiroth splinters, I don't know how they even exist. Maybe you might need to look that up. Like, where did Kadash even come from? I don't know. But them just even touching Genova's severed head from when the head was cut off allows them to manifest Sephiroth, like fully 100% he can be there. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of Advent Children, Sephiroth, like Cloud says, stay where you belong in my memories. Sephiroth says, I will never be a memory. And the reason for that is Cloud gave Sephiroth his way out in that statement. He thought he was being clever. This is my take. I don't know what this is, just I don't know if this is official, but Cloud said, stay in my memories. And Sephiroth's like, great idea, dude, because you are Cloud's a vessel for Sephiroth. Kadash was, all the clones were, everyone who received this treatment from Hojo is a viable option. But all of those other ones were failures or sucked. And Hojo, because he didn't see like outward signs of their manifesting weird Sephirothisms, he thought Cloud was a failure. Like, oh, he's showing zero signs. But Cloud was actually the best one because he hid all of the signs and went on the world trekking journey to get the black materia for Sephiroth without him even knowing he was doing it. So Cloud is the perfect Sephiroth clone. Sephiroth knows that. Nobody else does. And so that's why here in this scene, at the edge of reality, Sephiroth, who is able to manifest himself in fragments via the life stream, in memories, in all sorts of different places. And we saw all of the Marcus types manifesting Sephiroth, as is normal for the OG universe as well. That's completely within the realm of the events of the original game. Sephiroth knows, Cloud, you are the perfect vessel for me. You are the perfect one to help me through with this plan, because you are the one that ultimately is the greatest success. You are the cream of the crop of my progenitors or whatever. Wait, no, not progenitor. That would be before. What's the, I don't know what the word is. Essentially all of his clones.
Yeah.
Cloud is the strongest, best one to do it. And Sephiroth knows that. So I think what he's saying is like, help me, extend out my hand, join me together. Like, he's kind of playing on the fact that Cloud doesn't know that without Cloud, there is no Sephiroth plot. Like, he's saying we need to essentially merge or be in complete goal alignment for this to work. Mm-hmm. I need you, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to be able to actually do this myself.
Yeah, you're my best chance at fulfilling my destiny.
Yes. I'm like a shadow lurking and able to, you know, shove a sword through President Shinra and float around and do creepy stuff. But like, at the end of the day, I'm going to need a badass, and that's you. So
nice.
That's kind of my take on all this.
I love it. That's a lot. That's a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah.
Recall that Cloud says never to this proposition, and they fight, but they're painfully evenly matched. Sephiroth disarms Cloud. His sword, whichever one you equip, goes half stuck into the primordial asteroid moon rock. And then Sephiroth says, 7 seconds to the end. Time enough for you, perhaps, but what will you do with it? Let's see.
7 seconds till the end. Time enough for you, perhaps. But what will you do with it? Let's see.
Then Sephiroth disappears, and we spend the next 7 seconds staring at the nebula. This is an unusual thing to say. I mean, I guess we've got 7 seconds until the timeline splits, but it's also like a riddle too. Is it seeding? Like, I don't know. What I have written here, I don't like what I, after I just said that, I don't really like my note. It just seems like 7 seconds seems like a very strange thing to constrain the rest of the scene on. And when the scene ends, it's just Cloud staring at the nebula. We don't see him take any action. There's no like slashing at a vortex, which explodes reality, and then the screen cuts into two, and we go that way, and reality, or the other reality goes that way. It's all very subtle and subdued, and right. I don't know what to take from this.
I don't know what to take from it either, and I really can't comment it out further. I still don't have an answer for that line for you.
Nice. Okay. Well, another thing I thought was like, is it like seeding the next riddle in Rebirth? Like, is the phrase 7 seconds Cloud going to be what run Cloud run and I need you for something will be in Remake? I don't know. Whatever. Let's move past it. So
7 seconds till the end. There's also in Final Fantasy 13, there's 13 days until their, what was it? Their focus eats them or something like that. Right.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it really? And,
yeah. Something like that. Weird. And then in Final Fantasy 16, I believe there's 16 total like iconic entities. And so I might just be one of those things they've been doing in recent years of like the number of the game also has to have a significance somewhere in the plot for some weird reason.
Seven seconds till the end. Of this podcast episode. Not exactly, but thanks for listening, as always. Join us again for part two, where we will be going over the game's ending sequences and review our thoughts and feelings about the game now that it's come to a conclusion. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We will catch you next time. Bye-bye.